Chapter 28. The sights and smells, often incredible, though occasionally not in a good way, left Charlie feeling akin to a kid in a candy shop. Sure, he was a beast of burden at the moment, but he was actually walking through an alien bazaar, the first human ever to do so. The thought made him once again wonder where Rika was. She'd be amazed at the cacophonous marketplace. It had been several days, and they still had not let him see her. When they headed back to the ship, he'd see if he could get any information from the other slaves in their little group. For now, however, he just tried to keep up. They walked for another 10 minutes or so, until the Tsislaver leading them stopped outside a small tent. The front was open, and inside Charlie could see all manner of oddities carefully laid out on long tables. Contrary to the tent's outer appearance, the inside was the very picture of organization and cleanliness. "You four, bring your packs here," the Tsislaver said, gesturing to Charlie, Tuk-Tuk, and a pair of faintly yellow men with long golden hair. Utaki, they were called, a species of humanoid from a yellow sub-dwarf system. According to Tuk-Tuk, they held no powers themselves, at least not that they could wield. It was their golden hair that was valued. Apparently, it could hold a magic charge when woven and worn by a power user, though the Utaki themselves couldn't use it. This led to a market for their slow-growing locks, typically woven into a bracelet or choker. The truly wealthy could afford a belt or scarf of the material, but growing it would take years and a lot of Utaki. That was something few could afford. The rarest of all, with the exception of the first cut of Utaki hair, which always held the most power potential but was typically made at an early age, were Utaki locks given freely. Slaves could be forced to give their hair, but it lacked the basic element of free will that imparted a many times greater power than when taken by force. "These guys have more superstitions than old Chinese men eating rhino horns to get bigger erections," he had thought as the ridiculous mythology was explained to him. "Whatever floats your boat, I guess. Not my galaxy." "There, on the table," the Tsislaver commanded as they stepped into the tent. Charlie and the others gratefully slid the containers from their shoulders, the straps holding the packs leaving angry indentations in their skin from the weight. "Now, wait outside, and do not wander," the elfin man said, muttering a quiet word for emphasis. "Nari pa." A slight zap from the collars lit up their skin. The Tsislaver smiled, his point made, then proceeded to open the containers and lay out the contents on the table. Most were things with no discernible purpose, but the old trader seemed quite interested in many of them. "A lot to learn," Charlie noted. "It's like space Bedouins or something. Trading, moving on, trading some more." The Tsislaver unceremoniously dumped a large device onto the table. "Hey, that's from my ship," Charlie blurted. The Tsislaver gave him a dirty look. "Oops." "Binari pa," the alien growled. The next thing Charlie knew, he was coming to his senses flat on his back. "Okay, now we know what that does," he muttered, making note of the voice-activated remote command. "One of these days, you'll be the one in the dog collar. And then, my pointy-eared friend, you'll learn an old Earth expression about payback being a bitch." "You not making he angry," Tuk-Tuk said, as the blue man helped Charlie to his feet. "Note taken," he replied. The slave trader and strange Bedouin-like vendor haggled a while, though the Tsislaver had turned off the translation devices used by the slaves, so Charlie had no idea what they were saying. The device from Charlie's ship seemed to interest the man, though it was apparent neither knew what the hell it was. "I suppose I could tell them that's a wastewater impeller for the toilets. But they did want me to be quiet," Charlie thought with a little chuckle. "Wouldn't want to anger Mr. Pointy Ears over there, now would I?" Finally, the two came to an agreement, pressing the backs of their hands against each other in what he assumed served as a handshake in these parts. "Impezo ovusk," the Tsislaver said, reactivating their translation devices. "You, come here," he commanded the taller of the two Utaki men. "What is he doing?" "Shh, just watch," Tuk-Tuk said. The vendor's lackeys packed up an assortment of devices into the packs, but instead of loading one onto the Utaki's back, the Tislaver made the man kneel, then drew a deadly sharp-looking blade from his belt. "Tuk-Tuk, what the hell is he doing?" Charlie asked with a newfound urgency. He didn't know the man, but he couldn't just stand there and watch a murder. "We have to help him."
"It is okay," the other Utaki said, laying a reassuring hand on Charlie's arm. "Aaron will not be harmed. We have been through this many times since the Tislaver captured us in our youth."
Charlie watched as the yellow-skinned man's gleaming hair was held up in the Tislaver's hand, then carefully cut at a precise length, leaving the man with a bob cut instead of flowing golden locks. Coin changed hands, and the Bedouin vendor grabbed the hair, quickly secreting it in a pouch secure within his robes. "You three, come here. We take these with us," the Tislaver ordered. Soon they were back walking the marketplace, a bunch of random alien junk traded for a bunch of other random alien junk, at least to Charlie's uneducated eyes. That and a pisswater pump from his ship, the sale of which amused him to no end. He just hoped they'd turn around soon. His pack was even heavier after the trade, and he looked forward to being free of its weight. No such luck. They walked and looped through the marketplace for nearly 2 more hours as the Tislaver conducted his business, before he finally steered them back toward the waiting ship. Charlie didn't want to be in a cell, but as tired as he felt, he nearly did, if only for the comfort of his cot. But that was before things went to shit.